All right, now I can speak. I want to echo Chris's thanks to Halsey and Anna and the folks at White Whale that are keeping poetry alive in this like really weird and kind of fracturing, you know, disparaging time. I wanted to start my reading off with this poem that I'm starting all my readings off with now, because we're talking before the reading about people that are no longer with us and how difficult of a year it's been for us. And I lost a friend, a lot of us lost a friend who's an amazing person, amazing woman, amazing poet. And this elegy is for her. It's called If You Were Here, for Barb Dahlberg. You would have mentioned the crocuses poking up in my neighbor's lawn as if from nothing. You would have remembered the ornamentals in my lawn, their lushness, before their end of season cut down. It's early spring, but the air is frozen into my bones, my wind-whipped face. But you wouldn't have mentioned winter, or the hair you've lost, what's happened inside your body. Today, for some reason, I want to tell you about the possum I stopped for, the one I missed with my car on the way to work in the dark, of the cat I saw on the way home, dead, frozen in a half scream in a stranger's yard. There is nothing beautiful about death, just this space between air and a reason to keep going. If you were here, I'd ask you what that is. Perhaps there's an answer in the periwinkle planters that adorn our house, the cardinals that have come back to the mimosa branches as if they've forgotten something, something so important, it's worth staying here, worth searching. So moving on from that, I want to switch gears and read a new poem. And I'd like to say before I start this poem that those of you know Michael Sims know what a wonderful poet he is. And some of you may not know what a wonderful ambassador to poetry he is as well. And he's been a wonderful support to my work and the work of a lot of poets and his amazing journal, Vox Populi, as well. And this poem was published there. It's called Mind. 500 feet below ground, in a place we'll never see again, we sweat water lines, pipe in bathrooms, and showers for miners. I shine torch flames to light my way out of a ceiling lined with mottled rock and down dugout tunnels of stone. They haven't bothered painting the walls because they'll bulldoze everything we've done. Every faucet handle and shower head, the dizzying maze of copper lines, every offset drain snaking through walls and floors, carrying the days of our exhaustion, the arthritis in our knees, and all the beers we can throw back in 6 weeks to numb the pain of our breaking. No one ever said we'd be leaving the ghost of our bodies here in Ace's bar, in the 60-hour work weeks, in the slow walks through the mud to our trucks. They'll bury us after the miners have laid bare the earth, clean the coal under the mountain we drive down, swing wrecking balls into the men's and women's rooms, caving in break rooms and bunk beds, in the extension ladder staircase. We'll keep the black air we breathed in and the memory loss. Remember the sounds of those clicking cars in the darkness, the rush of water when we turned the valves on, how every joint held. I sort of had the auspicious experience of getting a new job, being hired to work at a hospital right before COVID. And I have a couple poems about those experiences. This is one of those poems. It's called Fires. 9 p.m. in the psych ward, and I'm passing through keypad doors, a taped sign that says elopement risk. Be cautious. And my mind drifts to forbidden love and that Robert Browning poem. But the only light here is lunar and cold in room 3311, where a woman ripped the outlets from the walls. We've removed her, nurse says. I've never seen anything like it. to do that with your bare hands. I'm smoldering, thinking of her fingernails, one wedged like a coin in the drywall, of my own hands seared raw with solder burns, the steel stud I rubbed past in a ceiling reaching for black holes, a soil stack carrying sickness. And suddenly it's natural to imagine reaching into a wall for a sharp fire. Last week, on the plane trip back from Florida, before we landed, before we knew we'd be okay, the plane was shaking like a fever and the sky tumbling gray into rain, and I'm reading a magazine to get my mind off this. The page opening to the article on electricity in the body. How a person can put out 2,000 watts when sprinting. But how many for a sister screaming for meds when the night took down power lines, wet roads, the hospital flashing dark, tree limbs sparking? How many for quarantines and layoffs, for murder hornets and sex, screaming our heads off at the Phish concert, guitar solos like transformers on fire? And what about the light switch at the real estate office? My mother is sitting there, pen in hand, her hair a frazzled wire. How much for the lamplight we left on in her empty house? We're driving away for the U-Haul and windows stripped of everything, the way the sky broke on the way home before the rain, all that fracturing light. One more hospital poem. This is called The Fluttering. I'm stumbling out of the dark and back down again, winding out of the rutted valleys of the Mon, ass crack of the world, and broken roads past AJ's crane and 100 other rusted necks, reaching for a sky I never wanted to know. Exhaust blowing fog into a morning the shade of bruised and regret, passing lane headlights flashing slow like tired ghosts. No one here will ever say they ever wanted this life. Only this flare of sore wrists, the years of twisting pipes, diving into the dark of underneath, of bleakness. In every way, this is an act of disappearance. But this muted morning, the men from Local 27 are chatting about the weather woman's breasts. While outside, the air is losing its memory, a rash of embers, flaming lights around the corner by Irwin Iron, where steel is burning and the men there breathe it in. Today, I've made it here again, to this five-story building, to crawl under another dirty sink, into the wrecks of leaks and ceilings where confetti of rust rains into my eyes. We're all one day closer, the 64-year-old plumber tells me. And I think about my father, the same age as me and a year away from his last heart attack. The fast flutter in the center of my chest as I stand atop a ladder, peer into the dark above a wet wall, click my flashlight on. So I'm going to read a couple poems from my new book, Fountain, and from Main Street Rag Press, which just came out. So this is my virtual, unofficial kind of launch for that. And this poem still has one of my favorite titles. It's called Rocking Mahjong at Panera. For weeks now, I'm watching the strangers gather. What's your name? And I'm teaching electrical now at Westinghouse. Gertrude sets her oxygen down by the divorcee. Men and women coming alone and staying. I think drugs, think alcohol. The grandmother's son, a model in New York, hasn't talked to her in weeks. I watch purses and plastic bags spill open in small explosions. They snap tiles down, rocking mahjong for the lonely. I'm watching them and not thinking of the last time my father sat down with us at the dinner table. My mother blowing up the dust off a caved-in box and setting it down. Would go over the rules to life and Clue, Monopoly. I empty the box full of pastel bills, the red plastic hotels, houses small as pills. None of us could tell our father was dying. We were here to learn the meaning of want and to gather assets, be transformed. into silver dogs and rocking horses, building lives away from our own, trying to make it one more go-round, pass go, collect another 200. In ripped chairs, we hunched our backs and stroked our chins like fake Carnegies and Fricks, under the glare of the kitchen light where my father sat in the last year of his life, shaking his hands, dice banging in his fist. He breathed into the hole and let it go. This next poem I wrote, I was talking to my mother about experiences that she had and relatives, and because I regret I never went to the family reunions that a lot of my relatives went to, because I never really learned about our relatives. So she always told me the story about how she hated Lake Erie and like, why do you hate Lake Erie? So this poem is about why she hates Lake Erie. She's thinking of her mother in 1949, the year the boat took a nosedive, storms lifting her nine-year-old world above the undulating lake, white-knuckling scuffed seats. Hang in there, honey, my mother said. And whatever was inside her poured out in a rush. She's older now, but her same shipwrecked memories keep coming at us in waves. How the basements in Butler Street flooded, the fire that took her mother's house. I don't want to add to the aftermath of my day here when the Caesar salads arrive. Everyone eating the hot potato soup when my niece announced her favorite bath and body scent is thunder and rainforest. She loves the water and musicals. The swell of her voice lifts and falls like current as she talks about the concert she went to last night, glowing as she combs the blonde waterfall of her boyfriend's hair with her palm. They fit into each other like designer gloves. Everything that hasn't happened is waiting for them. Off the exit behind the restaurant, the last phone call, the breakup dinner, the long drive alone to college. Now she's talking about her new job. I lock people in rooms and they get clues. They have to figure out how to get out of the submarine. There's a shark coming in 30 minutes. You have to imagine it. People scream. It's fun. Everything that can kill her gathers around her like water. Keep sitting here, I want to say. Let's eat together. A little longer and say nothing. Wait for the rain to fall and the wind to take down trees. Every crack in the darkening sky is a gunshot that hasn't found us. Let's watch the flood from right here. The blur of this life and the waves come breaking. There was a word for this. We've already swallowed it, along with the lobster and the herb-crested salmon, saying, taste this. Instead of, my cancer's back, or I've lost my job, they're telling me I need the surgery. We dig deep into our plates, scrape them clean, argue about the check, saying, let me, no, let me. I got this, no, let me. It's my turn. Two more poems. Recently sold my mother's house, and I'm so thankful because she's in a place now where I don't have to worry. I don't have to worry about an old house. So this is about selling her house. It's called In the Beginning. There were 50-foot pines and a spike plant, Our Lady of the Broken Cobblestones, and a path to her house splayed with needles and the plastic grotto she came with from Rite Aid. My mother's backyard is a pilgrimage to every dropped leaf and seedling, pizza flyers and tinsel still taped to her railing from last Christmas. I'm selling her house over the phone as I steal one last look through her sun-flooded windows, the old bones of her hardwood floors visible from the street. My mother is on the other line making time for me between Saturday Mass and the domino playoffs. She's sipping Zinfandel at Sunset Crossing Apartments, where everything is becoming new again. The insurance papers she can't find, the name of the restaurant, and her doctor's appointment lost in the fog of her previous life. And the one I imagined for her, I've just picked her up for breakfast. There'll be no medications to forget to take, no questions left unsaid about her tests, how much time she has left. I've canceled my ocean vacation So I'm sitting at home watching webcams of the Atlantic, boardwalk traffic, and the splash of current. If I leap into my laptop screen, I can feel the shrapnel of shells against my feet, fragments of bone immaculate as cracked pottery. Outside, I stand up from the table. My mother is speechless, staring at the shore. She's forgotten her fear of water, so she stands with me in awe of the crashing wall, all that wet pulling. And we're near that hotel, the one that sits next to the kite shop, with that eagle still tied off on the rail. And there's a song playing. It'll come to me. Just now, I can't remember. Thank you all for listening. I have one last poem. And as I see, Jason Irwin is here, and this poem I wrote for him, and this is sort of like my response. He wrote this like amazing barbershop poem, so I always wanted to write a barbershop poem. So this is mine. It's called Classic Cuts. Sideways hat and tattooed hands. I watch Ace, the 30-something barber I found via the internet in Lincoln Road, down the gravel runoff behind the dollar store and cut rate beer. Ace asks how I found them, and we talk about old school barbers, how you can't find them anymore. I think about Jerry, where I used to go, the 80-something grandpa who called me Long Shanks, even though I was bald. Told the same stories every time about his World War II bride, beautiful and flaking apart on the unframed photo on the wall. Hit it just the rabbit ear so all of us watching, waiting, could watch the big college football game. Pitcher shaking each time a neck was buzzed, the hum and the old man smell of aftershave and talc slapped on shaved skin and laughter. Jerry asking me if I could trim that jacked up beard of mine. I learned of his death from the pile of papers outside his shop, and Ace talking about it, his flat screen blasting People's Court and commercials for hover rounds and Mucinex. Driving home past the closed True Value Hardware in a vacuum shop, I wonder if anyone will remember me, stop somewhere, and tell stories of how things used to be, the better days when I was here. Thank you.